Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton and our producer this morning. Just when you thought it couldn't get any more interesting in Washington,
wow,
what a week it has been for the Biden administration. Now, we'll start real quick just to kind of remind you about how the week started. The president went down to El Paso to see the border after the border had been sanitized where he was going to be visiting. As you know, they cleaned up the streets of El Paso. They moved migrants off the streets where there was overcrowding. The president got a sanitized version of what's going on at the border, so he was criticized for that by a lot of people. Then you had your nationwide ground stop of the airlines. First time that's happened since 9/11, so the heat was on. But then it really warmed up with information coming out that intel memos on Ukraine, Iran, and the United Kingdom, briefing memos for world leaders, and a memo to President Obama, top secret material, as NBC reports, these documents found at an office in downtown Washington, the Penn Biden Center, and also at the president's residence in Wilmington, Delaware. This all in contrast to the Mar-a-Lago investigation. A lot of questions are being asked, and we've got a lot of those questions that we will present to you this morning from different people who are asking them. But to kind of summarize how it all went down, we'll count on the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, and this was a press briefing he had on Thursday.
On the evening of November 4th, 2022, the National Archives Office of Inspector General contacted a prosecutor at the Department of Justice. It informed him that the White House had notified the archives that documents bearing classification markings were identified at the office of the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, located in Washington, D.C. That office was not authorized for storage of classified documents. The prosecutor was also advised that those documents had been secured in an archives facility. On November 9th, the FBI commenced an assessment consistent with standard protocols to understand whether classified information had been mishandled in violation of federal law. On November 14th, pursuant to Section 600.2B of the Special Counsel Regulations, I assigned U.S. Attorney Lausch to conduct an initial investigation to inform my decision whether to appoint a special counsel.
So he mentioned the Penn Biden Center. There was a very interesting headline in the New York Post. Penn Biden Center, where classified papers were found, is a dark money nightmare. And that was a quote from a person they interviewed in the article. They say that the Ivy League think tank, where lawyers found the classified materials linked to the Obama White House, is a patronage mill for the Biden administration, raising suspicions among critics that its establishment attracted tens of millions in donations from anonymous Chinese donors. The report in the New York Post goes on to say, University of Pennsylvania received more than $30 million from Chinese donors shortly after the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, which functioned as an office for Joe Biden before elected president. It was announced back in 2017, and that according to public records being reported in the New York Post. Kind of an interesting scenario when you start to think about all of the connections with Hunter Biden and China and then documents in Ukraine. You're kind of like, wonder what's going on here. And then we have to think about the cover-up. As the Attorney General noted, it came to his attention before the election back in November. So let's say we wait until after the election. Well, the election was the first week in November. Now it's mid-January. Why are we only finding out now about this? How far were they going to take it until it leaked to Jamie Gangel over at CNN? So just so many questions. And Kevin McCarthy, of course, the new Speaker of the House. And he had a question that he wanted to ask about Biden and the documents and kind of the timing on this. And this is the new Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, with one of the big questions of the week.
So surprising to me is that this came out before the election. Why does his Department of Justice treat people differently? Every time we find something that comes out before the election dealing with Biden's family, it's pushed under the rug.
Yep, pushed under the rug. And you remember when the Trump document story came out? Our good friends Nicole Wallace and Joy Reid over at MSNBC. This was their response to the Trump documents.
This is a national security crisis.
The extreme risk that Trump was willing to take with our national security.
Yep. Not hearing him saying the same things about Joe Biden. And many of the senators have made comments this week, and I thought this was an interesting one from down in the Carolinas, Senator Tom Tillis.
Joe Biden should know better. He was in the Senate for decades. He knows, like I do, that you do not normally, you don't even take a classified document out of a classified setting, the SCIF, as we call it in the Senate, let alone taking it to your garage. I'm glad his Corvette was locked in the garage, but that is not an excuse for having classified documents in that same building. The idea that, well, maybe there are only a couple of documents, we all know that there are a lot of documents that are classified. Some have serious and potentially compromising information in them. So let's get away from this idea, well, we don't have as many documents as President Trump, and get to the substance of those and how they actually got there. It's remarkable. And for the president to say that they did the right thing after they did the wrong thing doesn't add up to me.
And you do remember that President Biden piled on the former president, Donald Trump, instead of taking the high road. He was on 60 Minutes with Scott Pelley, and of course, Biden took the low road.
What did you think to yourself, looking at that image?
How that could possibly happen? How one, anyone could be that irresponsible?
Yeah, okay, well, that's President Biden on the former president's problems. So James Comer, incoming House Oversight Committee, here's how he feels about the whole thing. This will get really interesting on the Hill, by the way.
We need to know who all's had access to the president. The story doesn't add up. When he said that his lawyers discovered these documents on November 2nd when they were moving boxes out of his office, does anyone really believe that lawyers are involved in the moving business? Who would pay high-dollar lawyers to physically move boxes and documents in a move from one office space to the other? I'm not buying that. And then I'm concerned that this was discovered on November 2nd. Why are we just now finding out about it?
Well, Wilmington Gate is getting very, very interesting. And Corinne Jean-Pierre is, of course, the press secretary at the White House. Not a great week for Corinne. And, you know, I can't totally say it's her fault because she got thrown into this one. I bet she's like, why did I take this job? So here's Corinne Jean-Pierre. This is kind of her, basically all she said all week long. And she was peppered for, hours. I mean, I would think over the week, she probably got 2 hours worth of questions between all the different press briefings. So I can say she was peppered for hours. And this is basically what she had to say.
We have been transparent in the last couple of days. Remember, there's an ongoing process, and we have spoken when it is appropriate. And we have shared anything else specific to when the president knew or anything that's related to this, I would refer you to the White House counsel's office.
Yeah, so notice she said, we've been transparent for the past several days. How about being transparent for the past several months about this? Okay, I'm like, what? Past several days? You've been hiding the whole thing up until now. We'll cover up going there, but now it leaks out, and we got to talk about it. We're going to be transparent now. It's like, you know, they keep saying, we're following the rules, we're following the process. Your hand has been caught in the cookie jar. And now you have to follow the process. After the big deal you made against President Trump about all of this, you got to play it by the rules. But what they're leaving out of the equation here is that they broke the rules, broke the law. You're not supposed to do this. I think there's a person who had documents that she had taken home to work on a thesis during COVID-19, you know, when you couldn't go to the office, all that kind of thing. She's doing 3 months in the slammer for that one. So this is a pretty serious thing. And these documents have been sitting around for 6 years at the Penn Biden Center in some office downtown. 6 years the documents have been there. Who's been in there in the past 6 years? All these questions that everybody's asking and are so critically important. And there was a press briefing at the White House on Thursday, and it got wild. But we'll get to that next. First, we're going to head to Al Beede in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Heads up in D.C., Florida Avenue between 9th Street and 7th Street. Police activity has the road closed. You might want to avoid that area. Now to the Beltway, Inner Loop in Camp Springs. There is an accident. The shoulder is blocked approaching Branch Avenue, exit 7. At the American Legion Bridge, there's bridge rehab activities going on. Three right lanes are blocked right on the bridge. And in College Park on 95 northbound, road construction has the right lane closed just after the Beltway. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Gusty northwest winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s for your entire Saturday. Now, clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow expect a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
33 degrees in the nation's capital, 622, the Saturday morning update. It is a Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. And if you've watched any of the press briefings, generally the only guy asking the really tough questions is Peter Ducey. Well, it all changed this week because everybody started asking the tough questions. But Peter Ducey, this was one that he asked directly to President Biden. And, you know, Biden doesn't care for Ducey. He called him a dumb SOB at one point, a hot mic situation there, but he did. And this is Peter Ducey asking President Biden about the classified materials.
Classified material, next year Corvette. What were you thinking?
Let me, I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage, okay? So it's not like you're sitting out in the street.
So the
but anyway,
was in a locked garage.
Yes, as well as my Corvette. But as I said earlier this week, people know I take classified documents and classified material seriously. I also said we're cooperating fully and completely with the Justice Department's review. As part of that process, my lawyers reviewed other places where documents in my from my time as vice president were stored, and they finished the review last night. They discovered a small number of documents of classified markings in storage areas and file cabinets in my home and my personal library. This was done in the case of the Biden Penn Center. The Department of Justice was immediately, as was done, the Department of Justice was immediately notified. And the lawyers arranged for the Department of Justice to take possession of the document. So you're going to see, we're going to see all this unfold. I'm confident.
It got a little crazy. There was shouting again yesterday when the president was leaving to go back to the crime scene. I mean, go back to his residence. The reporters were shouting at him as he left the White House to get on the chopper, but he just kind of gave him that, I'll say grin. I'll just leave it at that. He gave him the grin and walked by, didn't take any questions. Well, at the press briefing with Corinne Jean-Pierre, it did get a little testy, and Ed O'Keefe over at CBS, here's a little back and forth with Corinne.
The president was asked yesterday but did not answer this part of the question. Why didn't he or someone in the White House inform the American people when these documents were discovered on November 2nd? Did it have anything to do with the fact that the election was just a few days away?
Again, Ed, this is under review by the Department of Justice.
And it kind of went on in the back and forth, and then it kind of got to this point.
You're laying out your part of the job. We're laying out our part of the job.
I know, but I'm just saying that we don't need to have contention. You don't need to be contentious with me here, Ed.
Oh, don't need to get contentious. So a little scolding there from Corinne Jean-Pierre. Remember, this is Corinne Jean-Pierre, as we played earlier, that was talking about all of the transparency. And it did continue pretty much, I think that went on for at least a half an hour of the back and forth with all of the reporters at the White House. And that's just one sample of the contentiousness. But they were asking the right questions, and so many questions. Who has handled these documents? Who's seen them? Were they processed in a way that they could take fingerprints off of some of the files to find out maybe who's gone through the files, or were they not handled properly? In other words, typically if it's a crime scene, you go in and you've got the gloves on and you don't mess up the evidence and you don't knock the fingerprints off of the documents by smudging them. No, you have fingerprints, but were they handled that way, or did a group of people just run in and grab them and now you've got no sense of who has handled the documents? Reports were that Hunter Biden lived at that residence in Wilmington at times during all of this, during the time the documents were there. So there's a Corvette sitting in the garage, and Hunter's, you know, he's kind of a ladies' man, so maybe he's got folks over, friends over at the house, and, hey, check out my Corvette in the garage. You know, check the Corvette out, and then, ooh, check the top-secret documents out while you're at it. Not saying that happened, but who knows? I mean, nobody knows because it's been sitting there for 6 years. 626 on the Saturday Morning Update. Got a couple other notes as to what's been going on in D.C. this week, including the first week of the Republican Congress, and that's next. The Republicans in control in the House of Representatives, you didn't hear too much about what they did all week because it was overshadowed by the Biden news. But we'll let Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, listing off what the GOP-led House accomplished this week.
In the last 5 days, we passed a rules package that no longer the power rests with a few, but to the voices of America of who they elect. We repealed and stripped the funding for 87,000 IRS agents. Government should be here to help you, not to go after you. Be able to protect the unborn. We just protected the Strategic Petroleum Reserve where the president can no longer deplete it and sell our oil to China. And we opened the house back up for the public. Something the public has not been able to be a part of for the last couple of years. That's just the first 5 days, and we're just getting started. So we made a commitment to America, and we're going to keep it.
So the Biden document problem is the best thing to happen to George Santos, probably in his entire life. Of course, he's the congressman from New York who apparently has fabricated much of his life in so many different areas. And a lot of people are saying that he should resign. And the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, was asked about the future of George Santos.
You've got a growing number of Republican members now that are calling on Representative George Santos to resign, or at the very least not sit on committees. These aren't just allegations. These are things that he's admitted to lying to, stealing. Why put him on committees?
Well, what I find is the voters have elected George Santos. If there is a concern, he will go through ethics. If there is something that is found, he will be dealt with in that manner. Why but not? They have a voice in this process. Why not?
It is 6:30. It is the Saturday Morning Update. Coming up, K.T. McFarland, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We'll talk to John Gizzi and Cheryl Atkinson. Jennifer Harper is next, too. :33, time for the traffic now with Al BD in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County on Georgia Avenue, both directions are blocked just south of Randolph Road. Pole is down in the roadway at Henderson Avenue. On the Beltway Inner Loop in Camp Springs, there is a crash. The shoulder is blocked right at Branch Avenue, exit 7. On 95 northbound at College Park, there is construction. Right lane is closed after the Beltway. And in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Gusty northwest winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s for your entire Saturday. Now, clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow expect a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
33 degrees, 634, the Saturday morning update. It is a Saturday morning update on WMAL, Martin Luther King holiday weekend, and we're joined by Jennifer Harper. She pens Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you.
You always have interesting survey results and poll results and research results, and you've got some fascinating ones this morning on psychologists.
Well, yes, I do. I have some very interesting research here from the American Psychological Association. This is some brand new material that they have shared with us, and here's what they say. The stress of following daily political news can negatively affect people's mental health and well-being, but disengaging has ramifications, too. So if you think politics is complicated and difficult to follow, you're right. And this sort of is reflected in this research. Here's what they say. There are strategies that can help people manage these negative emotions, such as distracting oneself from political news. But those same strategies can also reduce people's drive to act on political causes that they care about. And this is coming from the American Psychological Association. When it comes to politics, there can be a trade-off between feeling good and doing good. And that's according to Brett Q. Ford. He is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Toronto. And that was in a written statement that he sent over to Inside the Beltway. Anyway, he says, protecting oneself from the stress of politics might help promote well-being, but it also comes at a cost to staying engaged and active in democracy, he said. And this research was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. So that's your that's one side of politics we don't talk about too much, and there you go.
Well, that's mental health and politics. Let's turn to mental health in the C-suite.
Well, yes, I had an item in the Beltway this week called Hail to the Chiefs. And it's not just chief anymore. Our professional titles out there, Rick, are getting very imaginative these days. And, you know, the simple CEO is not going to cut it anymore. And this is according to BusinessInsider.com. That's an industry publication that tracks business trends. Very interesting group. They say that silly C-suite titles are all the rage as companies try to attract new talent. That's coming from Drew Lemsky, and he cited some examples which have surfaced in recent days. These are all real titles. I'm just going to read them to you. They're all real, and here we go. We have the Chief Amazement Officer, Chief Heart Officer, the Chief Purpose Officer, the Chief Empathy Officer, Chief Remote Officer, Chief Enthusiasm Officer, Chief Happiness Officer, and Chief People Officer. So you kind of had to imagine how this trend is going to play out, particularly among government executives or even among the White House. I mean, you know, maybe sometime we're going to get a chief filibuster officer one of these days. And according to analyst Mr. Lemsky, he says, while they may be popular feeling-centric job titles, do little more than try to paper over a fundamental part of work, its transactional nature. Your company might operate more compassionately because it hired a chief heart officer, but at the end of the day, it's still a business, and that person can still fire you. And SeniorExecutive.com, another interesting site, is also tracking this trend. And here's what they found. There was also chief customer officer, chief brand engagement officer, chief people officer, chief innovation officer, chief sustainability officer. And they say that these titles and others have been welcomed into the C-suite, particularly in the Fortune 500. And smaller companies and startups are more recently embracing this trend. And they say that it's transforming their leadership teams with new roles that address today and tomorrow's priorities. So what kind of chief are you? Are you a chief heart officer or empathy officer, Rick?
Chief complainer about what's going on in the world. All right, so your employment future, you could be CEO, CFO, CTO. What about the CIA?
Very well said, Rick. I like that. The CIA has announced if you are interested in applying for a job at the agency, they have a new way to do that. So this is kind of attention to job seekers or people you may know that would be interested. The CIA has launched something called MyLink, and this is a web-based system that the agency says will modernize and streamline its hiring process and help CIA recruit talented U.S. citizens to join the agency's foreign intelligence mission. In a statement, this is what CIA had to say. MyLink is available on CIA.gov and allows prospective applicants to express interest in agency employment by submitting their resumes online. Job seekers will be able to indicate interest in up to four different occupations, and CIA recruiters will identify candidates with requisite knowledge, skills, and abilities. If an individual resume meets the CIA's needs, a CIA recruiter will contact the candidate to discuss their interest in the position. And based on interactions with the candidate, the recruiter may invite them to submit a formal application for employment. Again, that's a statement right from the CIA. They say the recruitment changes make the agency more competitive as an employer of choice and will help CIA recruit the diverse skills and experience required to carry out CIA's mission. And they also vow, according to Director William J. Burns, they are committed to recruiting a diverse workforce at the highest caliber talent, and it is Mr. Burns' hope that changes in our application process will make CIA an even more attractive place for those who are interested in public service, and specifically the unique opportunities operated by working at CIA. Again, if you know anybody who is interested, if you're interested yourself, you can get all the details at CIA.gov.
Fascinating week in politics with the discovery of the documents at the then-vice president, now president's residences. So what does that mean in terms of the 2024 race? Donald Trump, that might let him off the hook a bit for the Mar-a-Lago mess. What are you hearing on the buzz on Trump these days, Jennifer?
Well, there is some buzz about Trump these days, and this is coming from our friends over at Morning Consult. Very interesting site most of the time. Anyway, according to Eli Yokley, he is an analyst over there. He says just over a year out from the Republican Party's first presidential nominating contest, Trump remains the front runner in a hypothetical crowded field backed by 46% of potential Republican primary voters. I repeat, Trump is still getting the buzz. He's still got some buzz going on. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is expected to launch a campaign later this year, is backed by 33% of the potential GOP electorate. So they're thinking ahead, but at the moment, Trump is ahead, 46%, and Mr. DeSantis is coming right behind him at 33%. They say that number 45's buzz is improving, but his favorability is not. Potential Republican primary voters have been increasingly likely over the past month to say they've heard something positive about Trump, though more say the opposite. However, Trump continues to see his favorability rating among the GOP base worsen as Republican voters warm to DeSantis. And this is Morning Consult. They're always kind of on the heartbeat of a lot of things, but moving right along, 46% of potential Republican primary voters say they would vote for former President Donald Trump. 33% would vote for Mr. DeSantis. And then 9% would pick former Vice President Mike Pence. 3% would pick Liz Cheney of Wyoming. 2% would favor former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. 2% Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. 1% would vote for Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. 1% would vote for Texas Governor Greg Abbott. 1% for former CIA Director Mike Pompeo, and 1% for somebody else. And 0% would choose South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, and 0%, unfortunately, for Virginia. 0% would vote for Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. And then this is Morning Consult poll that was conducted January 6th through 8th.
So each time the Congress changes, you have many new faces on the Hill. For decades, the way to sort it all out was you would have a little pocket guide. You could put it in your vest pocket or your purse if you were going to a cocktail party, and you have this little guide, and it has the pictures of all the senators and congressmen. So you take it out and see who's who. And you've got information on the newest version of the guide.
Yes, and everybody else can get all in one, too. This is a very nifty little book, and just as you mentioned, these are efficient, and they're pretty unbelievable in the amount of information that they put out. This is Congress at Your Fingertips, and it's kind of a must-read for anybody who wants to follow Congress like it was a Major League sports match. This is a guide for all the big doings, and it actually might make a pretty nifty gift as well. This is a guide to Congress. It's 192 pages long, but it is downsized. It's small. It's not a great big thing. It's called Congress at Your Fingertips. It's got the guide to lawmakers, key staffers, committee rosters, state statistics, maps, contact numbers, lots more. And I think the price is either $20 or $23, depending on which version you might choose. I think one has more features in it. But if you're curious about that, all you have to do is to go to publishing.cqrollcall.com. It appeals to everybody, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, anybody who perks up whenever you talk about Capitol Hill. This is a wonderful source for that. And again, it's Congress at Your Fingertips, offered through Roll Call.
Well, you might want to dash out and get one quick while it still has George Santos in it. Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. And we're going to check in with Jim Trusty next. But first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Virginia side of the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop, I looked at the cameras. I didn't see any crashes, and there isn't any construction being set up yet. You'll be at speed on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 66 in Fairfax County, you're not tapping the brakes on the eastbound side or even on the westbound side. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, lanes are clear both directions. And in D.C., 295, 395, and 695, no reports of any crashes there. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Gusty northwest winds will keep those temperatures down today in the low 40s, and the wind chills in the 20s and 30s for your entire Saturday. Now, clouds will be out there this morning, but a few sunshine peaks this afternoon, and then tomorrow expect a lot more sunshine with warmer temperatures in the upper 40s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
33 degrees in the nation's capital, 646, the Saturday Morning Update. The Saturday Morning Update continues this Martin Luther King holiday weekend. We are joined by Jim Trusty. He is a member of the Trump legal team. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington and the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
We saw the story come out this week about President Biden and classified materials found at his residence. And as somebody who has been involved with presidential documents for the past several months, what stood out to you when you saw and heard the news, and you've had a couple of days now to absorb it?
A good number of things really stand out, Rick. But I think the most fundamental thing that strikes me is the difference in treatment, the difference in the use of DOJ machinery between President Biden and President Trump. You know, the President Trump situation, our position has been very clear from some of the litigation we've done already, which is that there's no crime here, that this was a situation under the Presidential Records Act and under his powers to declassify, and the fact that he got to Mar-a-Lago with materials while still president, as it turns out, for at least another couple of hours that day. All of that combines to make it a non-criminal situation for him to possess any sort of classified material. And what he was met with were grand jury subpoenas, raids at Mar-a-Lago, endless fights with the Department of Justice, the use of grand jury to the tune of dozens of witnesses, lawyers having their phones seized. I mean, this has been an incredibly aggressive DOJ. And I'll get back to the public treatment of it by DOJ in a second. But, you know, that's what we had from August to, you know, really almost every moment through this week. In President Biden's situation, he has documents scattered in a much less secure setting, no matter what. I mean, Mar-a-Lago is like a fortress, including Secret Service and security. But in that setting, he got the great benefit of complete silence before the midterm. And now the information is finally trickling out, and there's, you know, pivots to have special counsel when originally there was a U.S. attorney from Illinois involved. So I think the, there's almost like an honor system treatment for President Biden. You know, we found some stuff. Can you turn it over to archives and let's hurry up and try to be done with this situation, as opposed to criminalizing the non-criminal with President Trump? And the big focal point I would look at, and I've mentioned some of them, but one of them that really still sticks in my craw was 4 days after the raid at Mar-a-Lago, the attorney general went to the airwaves to show or to talk about the warrant being signed by a judge and the property that was recovered. And that is the most unethical, unprecedented moment. You know, you don't see local prosecutors doing that. You don't see typical federal prosecutors, AUSAs, or the U.S. attorney doing that. But the attorney general took it upon himself to go to the airwaves and basically proclaim guilt and justification by doing that. And we don't do that to any citizen. It doesn't matter if it's Donald J. Trump or if it's, you know, just some person that nobody's ever heard of. You don't take to the air as a prosecutor without violating your ethical canons by doing that. And so that's something we faced just days after this unprecedented raid. And again, meanwhile, the kind of opposite benefit of silence in President Biden's situation by covering it up, by not telling Congress, by not telling anyone to at least get past the midterm and then get all the way into January before light is made of it. So, you know, I'll just leave the listeners with this on this point, which is, you know, I fully understand that legal decisions for a investigation in, say, Delaware do not have literal legal implications for investigations in Florida and Washington, D.C. But they do strike even, you know, complete disinterested parties, people that aren't lawyers, people that aren't particularly political, may not even follow criminal justice that much. I think a lot of people can sniff out unfairness and different treatment between similarly situated or roughly similarly situated individuals. So I'm hoping that this all plays out to where the attorney general finally shows some conscience, shows some legal analysis, and decides that the Mar-a-Lago chapter of the unending investigations of President Biden's political rival will come to an end.
Well, Jim, as I mentioned earlier, you were the chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. DOJ, so you probably know a lot of key attorneys in the U.S. government. Have you had experience with Rob Herr, the special counsel who was just appointed in the Biden matter?
Rick, I have, and I like the way you phrased that in terms of longevity. Really what you said is you're old enough to know everybody.
I didn't mean it sadly, that way.
Sadly, you're right. I actually was at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Greenbelt, Maryland, when Rob came on board as a young assistant U.S. attorney. And we actually tried a couple of MS-13 RICO cases together. So I got to know him well. I got to see him in action. And I consider Rob a friend. And I would just say that I think Rob Herr is a guy of great integrity. I think he's, you know, jumping into something that's necessarily kind of a challenge. But at the end of the day, no matter how many special counsel get selected, the ultimate decision rests on one person, and that's the attorney general. And so, you know, these are historic integrity tests for the equal protection of law, the equal enforcement of law, the due process that we all want in this country. And all of that is going to land in the hands of the attorney general. And we just have to see how he takes that responsibility.
Jim, some kind of scary headlines and a bit of a clarification on Friday. Loudoun County, the Loudoun County Commonwealth's attorney, said her office would not be directly involved in the prosecution of certain misdemeanor charges, and most cases would be deferred to law enforcement and the courts for prosecution. The list included hit and run with property damage, eluding police, I don't know why that's a misdemeanor, reckless driving for speeding under 90, and failure to appear. I mean, those sound like some pretty significant things that I would think, you know, a Commonwealth's attorney would prosecute. You've got more experience than I do in this department, so help us understand what the Commonwealth's attorney, what she's trying to do, and what is the impact. She did walk it back a little bit on Friday as well, so we should mention that.
Yeah, so I think the walk back deals with a little bit of overstatement from the media treatment in the beginning. The media originally took this to mean that she was essentially decriminalizing these types of offenses. And that's not what it was, so she walked that back. But this is a real head-scratcher. When you really get to the practical reality of how district courts work, and these are state district courts where most of the misdemeanor-type cases are heard by judges, no juries, this is just a head-scratcher. It is not going to work. It's not going to free up resources. But you have to kind of have gone through the process as a prosecutor or an attorney or judge or police officer to kind of know why it's not going to work. So she's taking this list of offenses, and many of these are not showing up on the dockets in any great volume. I mean, noise complaints, underage alcohol offenses, trespassing. I mean, do people get citations for this stuff? Yes. Does it cover much of the docket? No. And what she's saying is our prosecutors aren't going to handle those cases. They're not going to take the time to prepare those cases, to negotiate them, to litigate them as necessary. And so it converts a lot of these matters into what you would see with non-incarcerable traffic tickets. You know, if you have a speeding ticket, Rick, going through one of the, you know, many cameras in Montgomery County, for instance, you can go to court, you can challenge it. And the line of people that are going to trial are basically, you know, a bunch of folks that got tickets, and then there's a bunch of police officers on the other side of the aisle. There's no prosecutor. And you can go up to the cop and say, hey, you know, I'm here on this thing. I really feel like I got ripped off, whatever. There's negotiations. But the idea that somehow we need to empower the police to make prosecutorial decisions on these cases is kind of goofy. And the reality is there's no agreement with the court about segmenting these cases out of the dockets. So here's the practical thing that just blows up the whole model. The Commonwealth's attorney, the assistant Commonwealth attorney prosecutor, is still literally in that same courtroom handling the other 35 cases. Now they're saying, well, we're not going to handle these five cases. They're going to handle the rest of the docket. It's going to grind things to a halt on a practical level. The judges are going to say, is this a case with the prosecutor or not? Defendants are going to come in, or defense attorneys are not going to know if they're supposed to talk to a cop or to a prosecutor. It is just kind of a mindless, marginal moment. And then the other thing is you're going to have serious cases slip through the cracks. You mentioned hit and run, eluding police. You know, think about this. If you have a person that has three prior driving under the influences and they're involved in a hit and run accident, the community wants that to be taken pretty seriously. There's a real good chance that was another drunk driving incident. They just fled the scene. You're going to have people with crimes like driving suspended or hit and run that would be violating their probation for more serious offenses. And the Commonwealth Attorney's Office is saying, well, we're not going to touch this case. So there are going to be some bad effects in terms of the regularity of administering justice, of dealing with serious offenders who might have less serious crimes. And all of that, to go to the central point, you are barely changing the resource picture. You're not going to suddenly free up a bunch of prosecutors to handle murder cases by saying we're not going to touch the trespassing cases. So to me, this is a very wrong-headed, maybe it's ideological, maybe it's just kind of boneheaded, but it's a wrong-headed idea that will barely affect the violent crime picture in Loudoun County and greatly confuse the misdemeanor dockets.
And what message does that send to, you know, potential perpetrators in the community or people who accidentally hit and run and they say, well, you know, I guess I don't need to report this because it's not going to be a very aggressive prosecution if I do get caught?
Yeah, I mean, a hit and run, a property damage hit and run, which could be very severe, is going to be treated like a speeding ticket. And so there is a message there for the community, unfortunately.
There were reports this week that they're narrowing the list of potential suspects in the leak at the Supreme Court prior to the announcement of the abortion decision. Your thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, mostly frustration rather than thoughts. I mean, I know the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post reported that there's a narrowing of the list of suspects. I just don't see this as a difficult investigation. I know the Supreme Court police is is a unit that's much more designed for protection than it is for investigation. But this is just not a particularly complicated investigation. So I have, you know, two, I suppose, alternative theories for why we're now pushing about 8.5 months since the leak took place and without anybody, being identified. One is that maybe it's confirmation that there really is some pretty incompetent police work, because this is a closed universe moment. You know, there's not that many people that would have had access to Justice Alito's opinion or would have been predisposed or able to leak the opinion some 8 weeks before it finally got out to the public. So I think one possibility is just ineptitude, which is very frustrating for something this important. The other, and this is the one that nags at me, and I don't have any sort of inside basis for this or, you know, tipsters or inside knowledge, but, you know, I continue to be concerned that the reason it's gone so quiet and so slow is that one of the justices had some measure of involvement in this leak. It kind of an ends justify the means philosophical tantrum about the end of Roe versus Wade. And that, to me, would explain, you know, Justice Roberts not being particularly vocal or fired up to see the end result of this investigation. I mean, this was one of the most unethical moments in the history of the Supreme Court when it comes to their internal workings. And I think it really demands transparency, but something's going on where they're either saddled with some terrible police work or there's a measure of involvement they don't want to publicly acknowledge. But I think they owe that to the public.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Have a great holiday weekend, Jim.
All right, you too, Rick. Have a good one.
And we're coming up on the 7 o'clock news. And a quick note, Jim will be on with Mark Levin on the Fox News Channel Sunday night show. That's tomorrow night, so check them out together. Heather Curtis has the 7 o'clock news next. And then we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland are coming up.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.